I'm speaking today with Councilmember Helena Brown, who is the incumbent in District A. Councilmember Brown, thank you very much for talking with me. And first question I'd like to ask, you're in your first term in council. Has the experience serving on council been what you thought it would be when you first ran?
The answer is yes, absolutely. Not really many surprises. The only real surprise is that, yes, we can make government work for the communities. And that's been really encouraging to see that. And making sure the departments are responsive on a day-to-day basis, because we get emails, phone calls for different constituent concerns. And that's our primary focus.
Okay. Now, what would you say have been your main accomplishments as council member in the year and a half that you've been serving?
Certainly setting the bar high for constituent response, because that's what the district office is for, and apparently there has been that lacking for a number of years. And so we've been doing a lot of catch-up. But when you have this type of relationship that we have built with the different civic associations and the different neighborhoods across the board, I mean, district-wide, and they are just so thrilled to have a council member that's present, that's involved, that represents their voice and advocates on their behalf, and also the business community, which, you know, I'm there to represent them as well. And we've done so many things just to fix flooding or making sure, you know, traffic mitigation situations, beautification, garbage pickup. This morning we had a little ditch day. We had the city folks out and some volunteers out on Shadowdale. So we did a little bit of that. Just being a support system for the community, like we had right after the ditch day. I had to go to a meeting right before here where we're talking about having some type of committee formed for one of the local neighborhoods that wants to go and adopt one of their esplanades or a thoroughfare, actually, a whole strip that they're going to go and look for private sector funding because of the situation the city's at to go and do landscaping, do beautification along the esplanades to sort of help their neighborhood, because the city, unfortunately, can't meet the demands and the needs of the communities right now.
Well, you're talking about the city's finances, and you have said multiple times in your course of service that you believe the city is headed towards bankruptcy. Can you expand on that? Tell me why you think that is the case and what you would like to see done about it.
Thank you. Absolutely. I think there needs to be a distinction made between city government and an economic region and the society as a city of Houston, as a unit of living and working and all that. We are pretty good as a society, as an economic region, comparatively speaking, as the nation as a whole. But as a city government, we're in a very bad place. We're unfunded in our liabilities and our pensions. It's $4.5 billion. And these are promises that we've made to our city employees, to our firefighters, to HPD. And we're not meeting that demand, that promise that we've made. $4.5 billion. Then we've added to our deficit year after year to the tune of $2.5 billion. These are big numbers. These are not this is not a laughing matter. And we look at the financial state of cities like Detroit and San Bernardino and like 30 other municipalities nationwide. The math's still there. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight or when it's going to happen. I don't know. But it's a reality that we have to face as leaders of the city, is to preserve the city identity, the city structure, because we meet the needs of the communities. Street cleanup, street reconstruction, garbage pickup. If anything goes wrong as a city structure, that has a negative impact upon the society and the economics of the city.
So you've described the problem, but what do you see as the solution? I mean, if we're spending more than we're taking in, we can take in more, we can spend less, or a little bit of both.
There's many things that we can do to help the problem. Fix the problem. We talk about wanting to increase revenue into the city, but the best way to do that is not to increase fees and rates, which discourages growth, which in 2010, 150,000 Houstonians moved outside of the city into the county line. If that's discouraging growth or rates and increases, rather than raising fees for an additional revenue, what we need to do is perhaps decrease to incentivize, and that way we bring in new business, we bring in new residents to increase the tax base and bring in new revenue. When we do things like funding the Chevron coming in downtown, giving a tax incentive for Costco, you know, we do a lot of these tax incentives to millions of dollars to big corporations. But what are we doing on the other hand when we're raising rates on small businesses that are struggling rather than allowing them to help themselves do like a facelift through major thoroughfares to where that's going to bring additional revenue because the property value is being increased? That's the way we should go to help foster growth, move the city forward, beautify, and that property value increasing because of the value of the property increasing will bring in additional revenue, bring in additional residential folks, residential building, and new jobs with construction, with whatever. I mean, that's the kind of trend that we need to work towards rather than the other way of constantly looking ways to increase fees and increase cost, increased ways to regulate perhaps people out of business. One of the things we were successful in fighting was this ban on plastic bags, which we were saying, oh, because of litter. The EPA said that plastic bags was less than 1% of litter, and we were going to shut down an entire industry. Thousands of jobs here in Houston, 15 plastic bag manufacturing companies here in Houston. So it's the way we look at how we're going to solve our community's problems in a common sense, community-friendly, business-friendly fashion.
And you talked about pensions as well.
Yes.
In 2012, when the city's budget was being debated, you put forth an amendment that would have had the city not contribute any money
default
toward the pension funds. What's up with that?
The concept of defaulting is certainly a controversial concept, and I knew when it passed, but it was a point to allow people to have the conversation. And we are in a very bad financial state, and the mandates from the state level is part of the thing that contributes to the problem, according to all the people that, you know, are into the discussion and those who know about what's going on. And so if we're not going to address it, then obviously the state has to address it. If we're not going to do anything to change the system, if we want to change the system, that needs to be the conversation if we need to change the system. The other thing is, if we don't want to change the system, then we should be funding. We should be funding the pensions. These are promises that we made. If we have no intention to fund the pensions, then we're lying to our city employees. We're lying to our first responders. And so that's a hypocrisy that needs to be addressed. It's like, are we truly intending to meet these promises? If not, then we need to change the system.
One change that Mayor Parker has been pushing for in the system is to get a bill passed in the legislature that would require the firefighters to be subject to meet and confer as the police officer's pension fund is. Do you support that effort?
I don't know how I feel about that effort, and I haven't really studied the benefits and the negative impacts of that. And certainly I'm very supportive of the firefighters, and I certainly want to be able to have their ear. When I'm out in the community, when I'm visiting with the firefighters at the local stations, their outlook on things sometimes is quite different from those who speak on their behalf. And case in point is that we passed it, a sick leave amendments to their pay and stuff. And when I went to ask them, what do you think about this? It's like, we had no clue that you guys were voting on this. I don't know if we want it or if we support it or if we don't support it. And it's like, well, you guys need to let me know because I'm going to be voting on this tomorrow. And they're like, well, since we don't know how we feel about it, I guess no. But then the next morning, the firefighters, I had heard, they decided that they were going to go ahead and support it, even though initially they were against it, because Hope was supporting it. And so there's a lot of confusion, a lot of different players. And so I think we need to do better about communicating with those who truly are going to be impacted by these decisions.
Talk about your voting. You have gained a reputation for voting no on a lot of items that come before council. Some of these are, you know, basically, items that would simply authorize the spending of money that comes from the federal government or the state government or someplace other than the city government. Explain to me your philosophy behind that.
Let's get the record straight. I vote no 10-15% of the time. 80-85% of the time I'm voting yes. That's a lot of stuff I'm voting yes with. You know, we're trying to get the city moving forward. But it's that little percentage that makes a big difference. It's like, where are we prioritizing? We have to prioritize. Looking at the financial state of the city, if we want to continue the city functioning long-term for the future generations to follow us, we have to start being, quote-unquote, austere. We have to quite start, you know, saying no, an ugly word. Nobody wants to say no. It's not easy for me to say no. But we have to either start saying no now to some things or else be forced to say no to everything. That's the impact. Just look at Detroit and any all these other cities. It's like we have to be responsible as elected officials because we're there on behalf of the communities long-term, long-term plan. So when I say no to park reconstructions, not maintenance. I'm all in favor of maintenance up to, goodness, $150,000 or whatever. That's okay. When you start spending $250,000 of dollars in reconstructing a park to a point where it's unnecessary, I mean, we need to make do. We got to tighten our belts. When we have streets that need reconstruction, okay, I ask my community every day, you want this park reconstruction, not maintenance, or do you want the street reconstructed? Streets, potholes. This is where this is the foundation of our city, and it's collapsing. It's embarrassing when we have visitors from out of the country that come in here. It's like we're the third, fourth largest city in the nation. We should be at a much better place.
Well, talking about visiting other countries, last year you went on a trip that was supposed to be part of a larger city trip, but the airport folks wound up bowing out to Korea. For talks about, you know, getting a direct flight between Houston and Seoul. I can tell you, I visited Seoul about a dozen years ago, and you had to go through Japan, or I had to go through Tokyo to get there.
Exactly.
Tell me how that trip went and where we stand with that.
It went really well, and things are changing in terms of direct flights to Korea in this region, talking about in terms of Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston area, and stuff like that. American Airlines now has a direct flight coming out of Dallas-Fort Worth, so now we're going to be in conversations with Korea Air, which we couldn't previously because they were having a good thing there in Dallas-Fort Worth. You really couldn't talk to them about having another line that competes with their Dallas-Fort Worth line. That wouldn't be feasible. They would not change their routing. That wouldn't work because they've already established that. So now that they have a competitor, we have an opportunity to approach them and say, you know, how does the market in Houston look? Is this financially profitable to you? And the numbers indicate tremendously so. We're talking about people in Louisiana and the bordering cities and stuff wanting that are Koreans, that are Asian, Vietnamese, that they want to go to Korea, through to Vietnam, through Korea. All these entities are very supportive of a Houston direct flight rather than having to go all the way up to Dallas-Fort Worth. And we've talked to many of these community folks, and they're like very supportive. We have countless letters of support, including from the Council General of Vietnam and others, the Port of Houston authorities being supportive of this. So it's just a very difficult thing to convince people that don't have the aircrafts ready for it to either change their plans that they've already set in motion for future years, future cities that they're establishing direct flights with, and say, look, this is better. This is financially smarter for you to come in. And if we do establish direct flight in Houston, tremendous influx of investments, of rows of businesses, jobs, and we need that, especially in District A, because we have a Koreatown that could be so much better.
Okay. You have been the subject of a couple of profiles written in the Texas Observer, one in the Houston Press. I'm not going to go into the specifics of any of them. I'm just kind of curious. You know, I'm sure you have read them. Is there anything about them, anything that has been said in there or wasn't said, that you would like to address?
Okay. Well, my first 6 months, I would say, of public service, it was no surprise to me that I saw a number of those type of articles come out. And it didn't affect me because I know who I am as an individual, but also as a representative and what our goals are. And that was a tactic to try to distract and get us off focus on what our priorities are, which is the community, which is service. And so I don't get involved in that, you know, gotcha type politics and slandering and stuff. I just focus on what I'm there for, is to community service and responsive government and responsible city spending. And that's been my focus, is making sure that when we do have legislation, if you will, it's not really legislation that comes before council, that the community is impacted, know about what's going on, and many times, I want to say 90% of the time, they do not know what's going on. Some of their organizations might know, but the man on the street that's running the business, trying to make a day-to-day living for his family, and that helps the community, helps the taxes and everything else, they're unaware. And so when something comes before us, I'm like, what do you think about this? Even electrical code change, I talk to the industry, it's like, how does this electrical code amendment to the ordinance impact your electrical contractors or whatever? And it's like, wow, we have never had a council member come and ask us what we think about something. This impacts you. We need to know. You're the industry. That's been my motto, if you will, is that the best solutions for government comes from the community because they know what works for them.
So what are the current top priorities in District A, and what sorts of things would you hope to accomplish in your next 2 years as council member?
Primary always will be keeping the bar high for constituent response. That will always be our priority because we have something very beautiful happening in the district, and some civic associations that have been dormant have been reawakened, and that's encouraging to see. We have a really good thing in District 8 because of the involvement of the community. I don't know how other districts are, but we have a very strong community involvement in the neighborhoods and the districts and stuff, and it's getting better. And what we're also seeing is that finally, it's been a dream of mine since day one, is to bring all the civic associations together with the kind of sense of community, form that community, because we didn't really have a District A feel. It was like each their own. The super neighborhoods kind of had a little bit of identity. But bringing everyone together just creates an excitement, creates an energy that's very positive for moving the district forward. We're doing major thoroughfare revitalization projects, and it's not in terms of streets, because we're waiting on the city to reconstruct Gessner, to reconstruct Long Point. So while we wait on the city, which takes years, and one project took 20 years, it's just like ridiculous. But while we wait on that, because these thoroughfares need a lot of attention, as the people, some neighborhoods are embarrassed to invite their friends to their home because, you know, we're coming through, it's like, what's up with this? It needs a facelift. It needs a makeover, these thoroughfares. So what we're doing is creating kind of a committee where we bring in the different civic folks, we bring in the different business folks, developers, the management districts already on board, and we bring in outside resources and volunteers, and we go out there and we talk to the businesses, we talk to the property owners, we get their participation, so it becomes a win-win for everyone because they will benefit from having a prettier place to do business out of. The owners will benefit from increased property value. The neighborhoods would benefit because they're living behind these areas and their value of their properties are impacted by the quality of the commercial space up and down these thoroughfares. And so everyone's excited about what we have in the works. And this is part of the input, part of the ideas that come from the neighborhoods. They know what works for them, and they just, and every day I hear different ideas. It's like, then why did you speak up a little louder? It's like, we should have started on that. That's a great idea. Let's put it to work. We can? It's like, why not? There's nothing that we cannot do when we put our minds to it. The bigger the dream, I love it. The bigger the challenge. Let's work on it together.
Okay. Flooding is an issue in District A.
Very much so.
And, you know, you also talked about street reconstruction. The main vehicle for doing that now, for flood mitigation and street reconstruction, is Rebuild Houston. What's your view of how that has been, how that's been going, and how it's been affecting District A?
Okay, let's Rebuild Houston's a little separate from the flooding issue that we are facing in the district. Let's talk about flooding. Many areas suffer from high water flooding, and one area along Bunker Hill Road in Westview in particular has been one of our focus areas just because we had 200 homes that got flooded out, and we had a very problematic situation with lack of communication, lack of cooperation, everything among all parties and stakeholders. And so what we were able to do is start fresh. And from day one, it's like, look, folks, let's have everyone at the table. So we had the first workshop, flooding workshop, and it was beautiful. Everyone was so pleased because for once we were able to all have an equal footing, seat at the table, and have a healthy conversation about what the problem was, number one, and what our ideas were to solve this problem. And so then we followed up with a second workshop, and through all that time we had better communications and better dialogues and conversations, and to the point where we were able to have a groundbreaking of a new detention facility close to that area there. And so it's a baby step. It's a baby step, and it's going to be a long, long time till actually where that can be utilized to where it drains out the neighborhoods. It's going to be a long process, a lot of resources. But it's moving things forward in a positive direction. And it's very encouraging to see that, because it's with the community leaders that I'm able to do this. It's not what I do for the community. It's what we are able to do together. I'm being their support system here.
Okay. Council recently passed some changes to Chapter 42, the Density and Development Code. You voted against it and, in fact, tried to get an amendment that would exempt your district from these changes, or from Chapter 42 altogether, if I recall correctly.
Well, and the distinction needs to be made from Chapter 42, the ordinance, and the amendment that was specific to high density,
okay.
To urbanization.
All right. Tell me more about what was your problem with the changes to Chapter 42, and why didn't you want District A subject to it?
I'm there to represent the community, and the community, 90% of which I visited with, we talked about the impact that this might have on our neighborhoods, and they were overwhelmingly against this. And when I was asked by one of my colleagues on city council, like, are you sure that this is how they feel? It's like, I talk to them day in and day out in the civic meetings I show up at, I have my staff there, so we have a pulse on how they feel about things. So within 24 hours, I was able to get a couple dozen of them to give us affirmative, you know, in writing or over the phone. It's like, yes, we want you to vote no, and yes, we want you to see if you can't opt us out. Now, it's funny because the city of Houston used to have inner 610 loop as urban and rest suburban, and so we wanted to do the reverse where District A is suburban and everything else is urban, and there was all this political legal excuses like, oh, we can't, you know, do that legally. It's like, why not? It's like, well, because the reason why it was like that, because it was supposed to be a phase-out plan. Well, if that's a phase-out plan, consider District A a phase-out plan. And then down the road, you might make it urban too, right? Whatever the excuse you want to give, let's exempt those who want to be exempted. There's no excuse not to exempt them. But it's a very strong push for this, and there was no way you could have done that. But we made a good faith effort on behalf of the community, and we were not successful in exempting District A. So the next best thing is to go out there and make sure the neighborhoods were aware of what was going on, and they did what they needed to do to protect their neighborhoods, the look and feel, the quality of life, the subdividing of properties, the setback, how far from the street and all of that. So we had a town hall type meeting that we called, and we had 300 constituents show up, the most at any of these meetings that were held citywide. And everyone learned about the process, asked many, many questions. And it was like, when I was reading the questions up at the front, I was like, that could have been my question. But we're on the same page. The community is, across the board. There are a number of communities that might feel a little different, but not very many. Not very many at all. And so that unity of purpose and mind is a very good thing. I want to go back to your question about Rebuild Houston. Rebuild Houston initially was sold to the voters as $5 a property, and we needed this because we need to address our drainage problem because we don't have the funds. Now what we're seeing is higher than $5 a person, and rather than adding to what we have so we can address our flooding problems, they're using what we previously used on drainage for salaries for city employees, new vehicles for different departments, the hike and bike trails and stuff like that. And that's irresponsible. When we are in dire need of funds for drainage and street reconstruction, and we're going and utilizing those precious dollars within this drainage and street reconstruction fund and other things, that's inexcusable. And many people are discovering this. When I made an amendment to the budget this year, and I said, let us restrict the fund use, of the fund dollars, colleagues were saying, Mayor, is this true? And Mayor said, yes, we are using these dollars, not the fee dollars that's part of the pot, the pre-existing property taxes that continue to come in on all these other things. And so this is something that they weren't prepared to vote on that time, but something new information that came before. I mean, we see it every week in terms of the, where the funding's coming from, and I'm looking at where the funding source is on these vehicle purchases, and I'm looking on all that stuff. So I was familiar with it, but when I presented it, it was like, wait a minute. And we got the confirmation publicly in front of council, and so we're going to work now for the next year on what we can do to stop that. Because it's not smart governments. Streets and drainage, that's the foundation of our city. That should be our primary focus, because that allows for proper growth and stability and economic development and move things forward.
Okay. One of the issues that came before council a couple months ago had to do with food trucks. Houston's gained a reputation for being a really good food city lately. Food trucks have been part of that. They came to council seeking a change to the ordinances that would allow them to operate downtown, which they are not currently allowed to do. Wasn't any action taken on it at this time. I presume it will come up again. Do you support the efforts to allow food trucks to operate downtown?
The matter before us is still has a lot of questions, because I'm hearing different reports on what all is going to happen with this amendment and change, because there are various different kinds of food trucks in terms of quality, look, et cetera, et cetera. And is this going to open a can of worms in terms of having a standing department just for the regulation oversight of food trucks? And does the food truck industry truly want that? Because, you know, Joe Blow might start off with, you know, a shabby little truck, but he may end up being number one next year in terms of quality and look and feel. That's why you deal with the free markets. You never know where people are going to end. And, hey, Berry Hill Tacos, they started off with a food truck, right? So you don't want to necessarily say, okay, no food trucks in the city of Houston. This is, you know, for a lot of people, this is their startup businesses. And there are a lot of good quality food trucks out there. But then there's like, okay, who are we going to choose to give permission to enter into the zone? Is like, what are we doing as a city in terms of getting into that business of saying who's going to be successful and who is not? There's a lot of concerns that we have to look at. And there are concerns from District A's perspective. In District A, we have a lot of food trucks that are a nuisance for the neighborhoods. And so we have to address that issue as well. But then there's the whole industry of fair competition. Or is this unfair competition for the restaurant industry? Many questions that we can't just haphazardly approach this topic.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in Houston that forbids it from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. Basically, you can't put someone on your health insurance plan if you're legally married to you. Society's changed a bit since then. The Supreme Court had its ruling on throwing out the federal portions of the Defense of Marriage Act. While that's a federal issue, it remains the case that in Texas, a number of cities and now school districts are passing ordinances or changing their rules to allow domestic partnership benefits for their employees. If this comes up again in Houston, is this something that you would support?
I would not. That would be a no vote.
Okay. I'm asking everyone I'm talking to, who are you supporting for mayor this November?
I'm focused on District A.
Okay. I get that answer from some people that they're focused on their race. That's a perfectly valid answer. You do have four opponents that I know of in this race. When people go to vote in November, why should they vote to give Helena Brown a second term as council member?
We have developed something really remarkable in the district, and we got to keep the district moving forward and Councilmember Helena Brown working for the communities.
Okay. Councilmember Helena Brown, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Charles.